This is episode 343 with the founder of Believe It in the Run, a man who's tested more pairs of shoes than almost anybody in the country, Thomas Neuberger. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald, and my singular goal is to help you improve your running by getting stronger, racing faster, preventing more injuries, and achieving more of your goals. I'm a former cross-country and track and field athlete for Connecticut College, a columnist for Trail Runner Magazine, a 239 marathoner, and author of the Performance Training Journal on Amazon. You can learn more about me and strength running at strengthrunning.com. I could not continue this show without the support of our partners. I hope you'll take advantage of the discounts that they're offering. You should definitely hook yourself up with some free electrolytes from our sponsor, Element. They're offering a free gift with your purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And this does not have to be your first purchase. You're going to get a sample pack with every flavor so you can try them all before deciding what you like best. If you're not familiar, Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make electrolytes for athletes and low-carb folks with no sugar, no artificial ingredients or colors. I'm now in the habit of giving away boxes of Element at group runs whenever I attend in Denver or Boulder, and everyone loves this stuff. It can be very helpful as a way to prevent dehydration when you're running long or running a hard workout. If you sometimes feel overly tired or you get headaches, cramps, or sleeplessness after long runs or workouts, you might have an electrolyte imbalance or a deficiency. You can boost your performance and your recovery, especially in the heat, with Element. They're the exclusive hydration partner to Team USA Weightlifting, and quite a few professional baseball, hockey, and basketball teams are on regular subscriptions. Plus, Element is my go-to morning beverage if I've frequented one of Denver's many breweries the night before and I just want my morning to feel a little smoother. Check them out at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. You'll get your free sample pack gift with your purchase, and you can get your hydration optimized for the upcoming season. Thanks to Prevenex for offering 15% off your first purchase at Prevenex.com with code Jason15. Prevenex is a unique supplement company that holds itself to standards that the rest of the industry doesn't. And they're celebrating the release of Muscle Health Plus, which is a unique combination of amino acids, creatine, and ingredients that aid protein synthesis and the absorption of amino acids. This is your anti-soreness supplement. It will help you prevent muscle damage, which is a particularly important thing for aging runners who want to protect themselves from muscle loss and recover faster after hard workouts or long runs. Now, as is true for all of their products, Prevenex adheres to the highest of standards. Their ingredients are clinically proven to do what they say they're going to do. So yes, Muscle Health Plus has ingredients that are clinically proven to improve protein synthesis and the absorption of amino acids, critical for helping promote lean muscle mass, strength, recovery, and better body composition. I've been consistently impressed with all of their supplements and how committed they are to transparent, clinically proven ingredients, from Joint Health Plus to Neurify, Immune Support, and now Muscle Health Plus. Prevenex has you covered no matter your needs. Kim just used our discount code and wrote in, quote, "Doing a self-test of taking the amino acids after heavy workouts and then not taking the amino acids, I can feel a great difference in my muscles. I was quite speculative, but now I highly recommend it." There's also Heidi who wrote, quote, "Amazing results. I felt a huge difference in just a matter of days. Goodbye arthritis-related knee and bunion pain that years of glucosamine never touched." I love it. Get 15% off your first Prevenex purchase by using code Jason15 at checkout. You can visit Prevenex.com. That's Prevenex.com. And just remember, they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee where if you don't feel the benefits on their product, you get your money back, no questions asked. My guest today is a fixture in the running community, someone who's been publishing since 2009 when he founded Believe in the Run. Thomas Neuberger has since grown Believe in the Run to one of the top shoe review companies in the United States with their YouTube channel, email newsletter, website, and multiple podcasts. We joke around that Thomas has probably worn more pairs of shoes than anybody over the last 15 years, with maybe the exception of Runner's World Director of Product Testing and Runner-in-Chief Jeff Dengate. That is a high honor. So Thomas's deep experience in the shoe industry gives him an unparalleled perspective on the evolution of shoes, why some features are no longer available, and the future of running shoes. We discuss a lot more about how to choose shoes, when it's okay to buy shoes online versus when it's ideal to try them on in person beforehand, his thoughts on minimalist versus maximalist shoes, how to rotate different models, and a lot more. Now, if you enjoy this topic and our conversation, please consider leaving a review in Apple or Spotify. I read every single one, and they're so helpful at growing the show. Thank you. And now, without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Thomas Neuberger. I definitely want your expertise and wisdom on shoes. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about shoes just because, like, I don't know, you've probably worn more shoes than any human being on the Eastern Seaboard, perhaps.
I would think the only person that could probably rival me would be Jeff Dengate.
You know, that is so funny you said that, because I was thinking about that earlier and I was like, you know, it's probably Jeff over at Runner's World. He maybe has run in more shoes than you, but that is quite the high honor of maybe only being behind the, like, editor-in-chief of Runner's World.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a little, every once in a while, I feel like there's a little bit of, there's respect for each other in the space, but there's also a little bit of, I don't know if I agree with you on that one, but yeah.
I kind of love the shoe review drama that's going on here. But yeah, you guys have been around for quite a while. I think about 15 years. You started in 2009.
Yeah.
If I'm right on that. I started strength running in 2010. So it's so rare that I get to chat with someone who's been on the internet longer than me.
Well, it's also weird because, like, we've seen so much change.
So much change. I mean, almost everything has changed since I was like a blogger back in 2010. Give us the origin story of Believe in the Run. I'd love to know a little bit more about why you started it, what was your thinking at the time, kind of your goals, what you wanted to accomplish with Believe in the Run.
Well, actually, it started off, I was going to do something in your backyard. I was going out to do Trans Rockies Run. And at that time, I Run Far was the only resource I had. So I was like chatting him up on trying to figure out, because I knew he had run, Byron Powell had run Trans Rockies. So I started a website basically to fundraise, because I was raising money for a child abuse center here in Baltimore. And as I was training and doing stuff, I was kind of journaling there. And I was also on Daily Mile. I don't know if you remember Daily Mile.
Oh, I was on Daily Mile back in the day.
Okay. I'm sure if you were there back in the day, we would have had to have crossed paths at some place, because I was rampant on Daily Mile. I was doing challenges every week. Anyway, so I set up the website, and as I was training for Trans Rockies, and I was kind of like discussing, I was like, okay, here's what I'm wearing here. I'm going to try this water bottle out this week. I'm going to wear these shoes for this run. And people didn't really care about my training, which to this day is probably true. All they wanted to know about was, oh, what's the gear? Did you like that? Is that work? How's that? Can you tell me what that's? Let's try. So I started getting a lot of questions about that stuff. So naturally the post started becoming more and more gear centric. And then I remember, somebody sent me something and said, hey, try this out. And I'd love it if you mentioned it on the website. And so I started doing that. At the same time, I don't know if you remember Pete Larson, who's Run Blogger. He was kind of like a mentor to me at the time, because he was doing a lot of more science-based shoe review style stuff. So he's really into like zero drop at the time and minimal shoes and all that stuff. So he was kind of like testing it and filming people's foot strikes and writing up shoe reviews that way. And he started like introducing me to some brands and stuff like that. And it was funny because today I just posted a thing on our story on Believe in the Run on Instagram. a card that I got from Saucony when they were promoting the first, it was the third version of the Kimbara. And they're like, you're the first people in the world to get this shoe. And I was just like, so excited. So it really started shifting towards gear review. And the more I did it, the more opportunities came along. And, you know, at that time, like it was probably 3 or 4 years before Instagram started hitting off. I think I joined Instagram in 2011 or 2012. Nobody was doing it back then. So it was like this wild west of kind of like this new genre. And I don't think at that time, even brands knew how to deal with us.
Yeah, it was definitely the wild west of gear reviews and what you were putting up on the internet. I also remember Peter Larson. I think he went back to academia as a professor, but his book Tread Lightly was such a great resource for me. It was a very science heavy look at shoes and their relationship to injuries. And you know, at the time, I was hoovering up every training book that I could get my hands on, and so it was such a great read. How many pairs of shoes do you think you have put on your feet since 2009? If you could actually put a number on that, I would love to know your estimate.
I mean, I would say it's probably close to 100 pairs of shoes a year. So if I multiply that times 15, yeah, we're getting up there. Maybe that's a little bit inflated. I don't know if it's exactly 100, but like, yeah, I mean, if a shoe pretty much came out, we tried it out. And now I'm actually a little more selective because we have a team of reviewers. So I'm not reviewing everyone out there, but if I feel like it's an important shoe or an important brand to cover, I make sure that I get my miles in it. I used to be more diligent even with trail shoes, and now I just rely on our reviewers for my trail picks pretty much.
Do you guys have a certain methodology or framework for how you review shoes? Because on the one hand, it's very personal, right? Like you may love a shoe, I may hate the shoe, and it just depends on our mechanics and our body types and how we run and all those
factors. And what you prefer.
Yeah, my personal preference. So like, how do you think about actually giving someone like a recommendation on a certain type of shoe?
Well, it really comes down to the use. And a lot of shoes right now, and the technology's gotten so good. Like back when I started, there was some crappy shoes, and you would get like bad shoes that came out, and that could hurt runners, but I don't think you potentially could get injured from the shoes. But nowadays, for the most part, foams are pretty much there. You can talk to someone and kind of figure out, okay, what characteristics do you want out of your running? So like, if you were telling me, hey, you like a more natural, I'm not going to recommend, you know, Super Blast to you from Asics, you know, that you don't even feel the ground in that one. So a lot of it comes down to also having a relationship with our audience. They start to know, like, I'll have people message and be like, I don't care what Thomas thinks. I just want to know what Megan thinks because she loves super cush shoes and I want that. Or Robbie likes a little more firm shoe, a little snappier. So they'll pick Robbie for that one. So it really comes down to sort of the relationship we build with people that kind of tend to see, okay, he likes this, I like that, and kind of narrow it down that way. But if it's like a friend who comes up to me, there's a few shoes that I know are like, you can't go wrong with.
Yeah. What are those shoes? What are the shoes that you can't go wrong with? Because let me just first tell you my bias. I don't really like modern shoes these days because I prefer a lower stack height, more firm shoe that doesn't have a flared heel and not a lot of arch support. And most shoes now are just chunky, soft, flared heel beasts that make me feel like I'm running on high heels or like in clown shoes.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit cranky when it comes to the modern shoe market.
You're in a tough spot. And it's funny because we went to the running event this year, and I heard some retailers complaining that there's nothing out there for that consumer who's like, I want that traditional, you know, low to the ground, low profile, more natural feeling running shoe. The problem is it doesn't really sell anymore to like, and I think you're going to see some come out. I think the pendulum naturally swings back and forth. But I think that, I mean, what are you running right now?
So I am currently running in a Saucony Kinvara, which I like. It's not super chunky. It's somewhat low to the ground. I'm also wearing the Gel Noosa Triathlon racing shoe, which is very close to the ground. No real support. It has a very firm sole on the bottom, and I love it.
Which one? How old is this shoe? Because the Noosa is kind of bumped up the stack a little bit nowadays.
Oh, it's a couple years old. The actual model. Yeah. I bought it at an outlet store like a year and a half ago for $20. I couldn't say no.
That's actually the beauty of where you are, because those shoes are going to be in the outlet store. I loved the Nike Streakfly, the original, right before the Vaporfly came out. They had the Streakfly. I think it was a 6 or 7, and I actually ran a marathon in that. I ran a marathon in Kinvara in the New Balance. Was it the Vazi? I forget which one it was. The Zante. Then all those were probably more what you would have really liked, as far as just like ground contact, a little bit of cushion to protect your feet, but not much else. And it's easy. I think if you could evolve a little bit and wanted to try something, like stuff like, even it might be too much cushioning for you now, but the New Balance Rebel V4. It's just a simple slab of foam underneath your heel. It is a pretty high stack and it is well cushioned because it's like a PBEX blend. But I can just hear people tuning out when I go over these. But yeah. But it's a flexible, you can feel the ground, but it still has a lot of cushion. What I like about cushion shoes is especially we were talking, I don't know if we were on air when we were recording, when we talked about age and recovery and getting back out there, but these shoes with a little bit more cushion get me ready for my next day's run a little easier. I'm not as beat up.
Yeah, I think my days of like running 5 miles worth of VO2 max intervals in track spikes on the track are probably gone, because then I probably wouldn't be able to run for a week after that. My lower legs might be completely demolished. So I'm with you. I need a little bit more cushion these days, a little bit more for that recovery.
You also look, I'm just seeing from your head here, you don't look like a big dude. You look like a pretty light, your weight is probably not, there's no way you're over, you know, 150, 160.
Yeah, I'm a very cliche, stereotypical runner build. So yeah, I'm 5'7", 140. This is the heaviest I've ever been in my entire life.
You might want cushioning if you got a little bigger.
Okay.
Like it makes a difference. I'm 175 and, close to 6 feet. So I think that is a big difference I notice in where people gravitate towards shoes and how they navigate what they need as far as underfoot. Like the big guys, they love, you give them a Primex, like solid cushioning platform, they're in heaven. But I could give you like almost like a Merrell glove and you'd be like, yeah, this feels great. I can go.
Well, the Merrell glove is definitely one end of the spectrum. I have worn the Merrell glove and I tried to do some running in it. I'm such a middle of the road guy. Like I like the, not too high, not too low kind of shoe. Now what about for those runners who aren't as needy as me? They're not a diva like I am. They're okay with the modern shoe market. What were those couple shoes that you mentioned earlier that you think would work for, let's say, quote unquote, the average runner or most runners?
I mean, and it's also great that these are kind of in that price point of like right in the dead center of, they're not the cheapest ones and they're not the most expensive, but like 120 to 140 price tag. And this is a brand new shoe, so you're paying full retail for it. But like the Nova Blast 4, I think that the Hoka Mach 6 that just came out with a supercritical foam has a really nice platform that you're going to get a lot of miles out of. I mentioned the New Balance Rebel V4, that's a really lightweight one, so it's not going to work for everyone. A lot of people, though, you know, the shoe, if you go into a shoe store, the top sellers aren't shoes that we necessarily push. So we're not like huge fans of the Ghost, Brooks Ghost. We're not huge fans of even New Balance 880 and some of the shoes, Asics, Cumulus. Those shoes are super popular for, like, if you go to your running store, chances are you might be walking out with one of those shoes. For us, we kind of lean towards, at least for me, my preference is something a little lighter weight, a little more responsive, something that I like. It's like a fun factor that's hard to kind of quantify, but it's that feeling of like the perfect cushioning in a lightweight shoe that you kind of, as you're running, you feel lively and you don't feel bogged down. You don't feel like a heavy pendulum on the end of your feet, and you just feel like running and it feels good. And that's normally where we go, which isn't the top sellers at your local running store.
Oh, but that's where you need to be. I love that feeling, because it just, it's that feeling that makes you want to run fast and not stay in zone two for any of your run.
Yeah.
it's a great feeling.
It is. And that's the thing is, it's hard enough sometimes to find the motivation to get out there. It might be a little easier for me because I have shoes that I want to go try and get out. I have new ones. But if you're someone who's buying one pair of shoes for the next 3 months or 4 months of training or whatever, minus your race day shoe or something, you want a shoe that feels fun out of the box or feels fun when you lace it up and you look down and you feel fast. You feel like you look good. It just feels good. And I think that's what a lot of us are chasing.
Yeah, for sure. With your insider knowledge, Thomas, is the Nike Pegasus Racer that was around in 2005, 2006, I would pay triple for that shoe.
The Turbo?
I don't know if it was the Turbo, but it was like, you know, the Nike Pegasus has been around forever, but they had a racing version of it that I found comfortable for a lot of my, you know, normal distance runs. And it was such a good shoe. I mean, this is the problem with every runner, right? Their favorite shoe goes out of, you know, they stop making it and you know, they get into a tailspin because of that.
Yeah. It's funny because Hoka originally, and I'll get to your question here in a second, but Hoka originally, everybody was like, oh, the Clifton one was the best one. That was the best shoe. So they went back, reissued the Clifton one, and everybody was like, nah. I kind of like, it was like in your head, nostalgia, you were like, oh, that was a great shoe. Because comparative to the other stuff that was out there when that came out, it was light years ahead. So it was like, oh, this is amazing. It's cushioned, it's lightweight. But anyway, for your thing, I think you're talking about the Pegasus Turbo. So what that was they took a slab of the ZoomX foam and then put another slab of foam to make it a little more durable underneath of it. I think it was either not Lunarlon, but Kushlon, I think, underneath. So you had that double sandwich and it just worked for everybody. And a shoe that's kind of like that now, a lot of people think the Saucony Endorphin Speed is one of those shoes. And it's got a plate in it, a nylon plate, not a PVAX plate or not a carbon plate. But that's a kind of comparative shoe that I would say. Yeah, the Nike one had a fan base that's similar to the Endorphin Speed. But the Turbo is supposed to come back out this year.
What?
Yeah, we're supposed to get one. I would guess it would be around this fall. But
it's Christmas come early.
You never know with Nike. It could, it couldn't. Like every shoe that I thought was like one of their best like models, they tweak it, they turn it, and next thing you know, it just kind of falls off and then they move on to another project. But
what's your advice for the beginner runner? Someone who maybe only has 6 months of experience running, they've tried one or two pairs of shoes, they haven't really found the style, the brand, the features that really agree with their physiology. How would you recommend a beginner sort of wrap their head around this whole process? Because, you know, with how long we've been around, I understand it takes a long time to figure out what you like. Is there a little bit of a cheat code or shortcut for beginners to really figure this out?
You know, I would go to some of the shoe demos that are out there. So you can try a different product. I know it's expensive if you want to purchase everything. If you have access to when the shoe companies are doing demos, and just go out and try the new product. We'll be in Boston. We're going to be doing shoe demos for both ASICS and New Balance while we're there. But that gives you an opportunity. But that is the place, like, it's almost like kids' food. Like, there's stuff that when I was a kid, I loved McDonald's. I wouldn't touch McDonald's now. Not even because I am worried about health conscious. It just doesn't taste good. But that's when those shoes, like the 880 or the, you know, the Ghost, those tried and true, like, this is just your basic running shoe kind of thing. You might want to start there. And then as you fine tune, you want a little more cushioning, or you may want something like you, a little lighter, a little lower to the ground, you know, kind of figure it out. But I mean, I'll be at races and I'll be wearing a super shoe and I'll get beat by a dude in like Brooks Beasts or something like that. So, you know, it comes down to like how you feel in the shoe.
Yeah. Well, you can forget about mom and dad for a while. There's a lot more to talk to your therapist about when someone in Brooks Beasts flies past you and you're wearing super shoes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting used to, you know, being beaten by, people that are wearing basketball shorts. I'll be in like my singlet, my basketball shorts and, you know, high tops. They're just out there cruising.
Yeah. Your full kit. I remember when I ran the New York City Marathon in 2008, I was really struggling in the final miles. And this guy must have been 60, 70 years old and just looked like a senior citizen. And he flew by me like I wasn't even moving. And it was such a humbling experience. And you know what? I still think about it from time to time. And every runner needs a little bit of that humble pie from now on. And it keeps you a little bit more grounded.
I also see it as like almost like a little inspiration too, or motivation that when you, I love it. So like I start feeling, okay, I'm getting older. How much speed can I have or something? And then I go to a race and I see all these guys that are much older than me that can still throw down. And I'm like, well, geez, how fast were they when they were in their prime? Like these dudes must have been, you know, lightning. But yeah, you go out there and they're crushing.
I'm curious about shoe features or attributes that you've seen come online in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years that you think might be a fad or that might be something that most runners should be a little bit more cautious about. You know, I'm specifically thinking about, you know, the whole minimalist craze back in 2010, Born to Run came out by Christopher McDougall. It was a boon to podiatrists everywhere because everyone was getting foot and Achilles injuries.
I broke the metatarsal.
yeah. And, you know, you sort of could have predicted this at the time. Like, let's be cautious about this. This is putting a lot of stress on your feet. This is a training tool, not for all of your runs, maybe to be used sparingly in very strategic situations. Is there anything like that today that you look at and you're like, let's just take this with a grain of salt or let's be cautious?
I think it's more the pendulum swing. Like you say, like when you start seeing everything start to float one direction, you have to start thinking, okay, there's a reason why it floats. Like at that time, you're right. Christopher's book just crushed minimalist shoes. Everybody wanted to be in on it. It sounded amazing what he was talking about, Terry Hamara, you know, running in on tires, you know, it was romantic. And so people started purchasing that stuff. So the shoe companies are trying to fill that need. So they all went towards this minimal side. And like you said, injuries started popping up and stuff like that, but also really good stuff came out of it. I think the Kambara is one of the best shoes that came out of that era because it was lightweight. They stripped all the bullshit off. Like before that, you had the minimal shoes and then you had shoes with like plastic cups on the heel and plastic trusting systems underneath and, you know, all the stability control and all this stuff. And somebody at soccer said, well, why don't we just get the shoe down to the minimal part, get it really light, but enough cushioning that you can run all day in it. And the Kambara came out and it was like, everybody's like, this is it. That shoe was the bomb. Like it was the best. Everybody had to have it. And then you saw all the other companies start trying to kind of replicate that Kambara shoe. The same thing happened now where we're going to the pendulum the other way. Two things happened. You had the Hoka come out with like Clifton, which was the first mainstream. Like, I remember looking at it going, this thing is gigantic. Now the Hoka looks like a regular running shoe. Like, you wouldn't look at it and go, oh, moon boot. I remember when I opened the box, when they sent one for me to review, I was like, what the hell is this? Is this some sort of, it looked ridiculous. And then I wore it and I was like, this is the best. So everybody went to this Max Cushion, and we're seeing the results of that now, where we've got lighter foams. So they're making bigger stacks. So you get a little more bounce, a little more cushion. It's easier on the legs. But like, I think your sentiment earlier when you're saying, hey, I want a, like a dialed down shoe, it's kind of like the pendulum maybe starting to swing back towards not being as high and as everything as cushioned, even though it's light. And I think the thing that combines them both is light footwear wins. Like, for the experience of running, whether you like a light minimal or a light Max Cushion, if the shoe is light and it feels good on your feet, that to me is like one of the most important features of a shoe. So as we're seeing this stack heights get bigger and bigger, I'm wondering, you know, is there a limit to this? But also, like, I think the only thing that can change it now that people have gotten a taste of like a high cushion is if we can get that same feeling, but with less material. So I think that the future of foams, or whether it's even foam or something else, if we get down to having that energy return and that feeling underfoot, like, if, I don't know if you tried back on like an old school, not even like these super critical EVAs, but like the old EVA, I can't, like, I put those on and they hurt my feet. But like, they're coming out with all these retro fashion shoes, and it's like the old foam that we used to have. And then it's like, I'm like, there's no way I could run in this. But if the foams get light and we can have a thinner amount, but still have that protection, that energy return, I think that would be the thing that would swing the pendulum back the other way.
Yeah. One of the things that's very encouraging to me is material science and how all of these new materials and foams are allowing us to create shoes that just have slightly different properties. You know, they have more bounce, and the foam has this extra bounce so that you can then not use so much of it. So the stack height comes down a little bit. But you bring up a really good point of the fact that, you know, we probably have reconstructed memories of the shoes of 10, 20 years ago, and how, you know, romanticized our memories are of those shoes. And it totally reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen The Last Dance about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan, this Netflix documentary.
I loved it.
I'm formerly a basketball player. Strength basketball was almost a thing before strength running. But he wore the original Jordan 1s for his last game, I think at Madison Square Garden. I might be getting some of the details wrong here. But by the end of the game, he's ripping the shoes off his feet. His feet are bleeding. And he's like, oh, man, shoes have come a long way in the last like 14 years. And I bet the same phenomenon is going on with shoes today in the running space, and how we look back on some shoes. And it's like, oh, yeah, they were great at the time, but today we have shoes that are just so much more robust.
Well, it's the tough thing, even with what we do when we're reviewing shoes. So in the context, when we're reviewing a shoe, we're reviewing it compared to what else is on the market at that time. So a shoe that seems like amazing to us compared to what else is on the market, then the other companies see it and they kind of retool their stuff and next iterations come. And then somebody said, oh, well, you said you love that shoe. That was the greatest shoe. And now how can I trust you? The shoe's back. I'm like, the shoes have changed. Like, last year when we reviewed that, there wasn't, like, you can go back a year and a half, there wasn't a Super Blast. There wasn't some of the shoes that are some of the most popular. SE Trainer V2 and V1 didn't exist a couple of years ago. So it's as they evolve and things go, We review what's available at the time. So it does change. So sometimes we give a shoe a nice rating in comparison to what else is out there. But by the time we look back in a year or something, be like, and they do an update to the shoe, you're like, I don't really love this shoe. anymore.
It's almost like inflation. Like if you give a shoe a score a year ago, the score isn't worth as much this year as it was last year.
Yeah. I mean, there is kind of a caveat to that. So a lot of times we see on our traffic, on our website, or even YouTube, we get a big bump when a shoe first comes out. People are interested and they want to know about the shoe. So we get a lot of traffic. And then it kind of tapers back down. And then the shoe goes on sale and we get a second, like it's almost like an aftershock of people going and saying, if the shoe's worthwhile to buy on sale. And so in that case, I do feel if someone's looking for a bargain, the review holds up in the way that you want it to, because you're not necessarily, that person isn't buying bleeding edge technology or anything like that. So it still is going to fit their needs of what they're looking for.
Hey, a quick break to thank our partner Element for their support. You should check them out. Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make a delicious, sugar-free, high-sodium electrolyte that's perfect for runners with a high sweat rate or very salty sweat like I have. Now, if that's you, you're going to want all 1,000 milligrams of sodium that's included in Element. Electrolytes play a key role in helping you avoid dehydration, dizziness, cramps, and overall tiredness, especially after long runs or workouts. And Element is used by the military, law enforcement, professional sports teams, and they're the official hydration partner of Team USA Weightlifting. Get a free sample pack with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And they'll let you try every flavor before you decide what you like best. That's drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning for your free sample pack. Hey, just a short break for our partner Prevenex, the only supplement company that I trust. They've just released their new product, Muscle Health Plus. This is your anti-soreness supplement, a combination of creatine, branched chain, and essential amino acids, as well as ingredients to aid protein synthesis and absorption. Use code JASON15 for 15% off your first order at Prevenex.com. Now, if you're a master's runner, you want to build some muscle, or if you're particularly injury prone, Muscle Health Plus is going to help you hold onto your muscle and rebound faster from those workouts and long runs. See all the details at Prevenex.com and be sure to use code JASON15 to save 15% off your first purchase. Thomas, I get a lot of questions about rotating shoes and wearing a couple different shoes throughout the week. And I think it's a hard question because on the one hand, I fully support that. I think it's a good idea. But on the other hand, it can be difficult for runners because they find a shoe that they love. This shoe works for me. It feels comfortable on my foot. And they just want to run in it all the time. And I think there's so much value in rotating a few different models. How do you think about that? And do you think there's like a place for wearing shoes that are very different from one another that still feel good to you as an individual?
Absolutely. So I do believe that you should be rotating your shoes. I think that it prevents repetitive stress, but not only that, it's fun. Like if you have the means to have a quiver of shoes that you can pick from, it's the best. Like, and you should have a shoe that you want to gobble up miles in. So I mentioned like the SC Trainer V2. That's a shoe that is great for me to do. Like Megan will use it for like tempo stuff, but for me, that's a daily mile. I could just put it on, crush miles, you know, go up my, you know, view with that zone 2 and just cruise along and it feels good on your foot. But then when I want something faster, that's when I could throw on and I'll stay in the New Balance world. I'd say, okay, Rebel V4 for a day that I like want to maybe pick up the pace, or I'm out there and I want to say, okay, I'm feeling good. Maybe I'll turn this into a tempo run. And then I want a shoe for two different reasons. I would use like a super shoe. I'd either use it for long runs because the cushioning and the plate, I feel like do benefit you the longer you're out there, and especially for recovery. And then if you're doing speed workout, I love throwing on a big, you know, race day shoe that when you strap on, you go, okay, today is psychologically like today is race day. Today is fast day. Putting on my fast shoes, they're light, they're bouncy, they feel great. And it really switches up from like your daily trainer one. So if I could wish for every runner to have 3 pairs of shoes so that they could get through, and that's not including a trail shoe. So I'll throw in a 4 shoe for the trail. But like, if you could have 3 pairs of shoes that you can rotate through, and you know, like if you know, hey, I'm going to throw headphones on and just cruise today, I don't need a lot. That's this shoe. If I want to, you know, maybe I'm feeling a little sprightly, or I'm going to a group run and I want to be able to hang with people that maybe are going to run a little faster, tempo shoe. You know, you don't want to be coming out there with guns blazing and have your race day shoe on at the group run. But, and then that when you want those long runs and that, yeah, it's fun.
Let's talk a little bit about trail shoes, because I feel like there's been not as much innovation in trail shoes over the years compared with road shoes, but there's starting to be a little bit more in the last 1 to 2 years. Where do you think trail shoes are headed? Because I feel like it's just such a different ask than a road shoe, where you want a lot of cushion. It's just going to return force through, you know, after your foot strike. But things are a little different on the trail. Maybe you don't want all that cushion because you feel like you're on stilts and there's no ground feel, and you can maybe trip over stuff a little more easily. Like, how do you think about balancing that with some of the proven performance benefits of, you know, that high stack foam?
Well, you're dealing with a different surface you're running on to start with. So personally, I don't feel like you need as much cushion on the trails as you do on the road. And a lot of times something that deadens out the cushioning anyways is like these thick Vibram midsoles or chunky rubber midsoles. So it already takes some of it out there. But we are seeing a huge trend in kind of like trying to translate what works on the road to the trails. The problem I find with it is that you're right, the high stack is almost, I wouldn't say dangerous, but like if you have ankles like Robbie and you're going out there with a, you know, 40-millimeter stack trail shoe, chances are you hit a root wrong or something like that, you're going over. So I don't know. It's the one area where I think that you can get away with less and still have it. I mean, when we went to the running event though, like all the brands are offering more stacked, plated, race day ready trail shoe. But probably one of my favorite trail shoes, period, is pretty simple. It's the Norda. It's expensive, but it's made of materials that don't die. So I've been running in, you know, they send us pairs, but I have one pair that I've been running in now for like 2 years that I still like to throw on, and it's indestructible. It's got like a Dyneema upper, Vibram midsole that's just probably a derivative of EVA or something like that. So it's not like advanced that far.
And really, what's the name of the shoe?
Norda.
Norda.
N-O-R-D-A.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
They're out of Canada. Their whole thing is, so, you know, there's different ways you can go about sustainability. You could use a lot of products that are, you know, recycled nylons and this and that, or recycled rubber or whatever. Their thought is create a shoe that you can't destroy and you'll buy less shoes. So it's a little more expensive. And when I say a little more, like I think the average one's around $250, but you're going to buy one trail shoe for that's going to last you for years. And I love the feel of it. We have access to all different trail shoes. And last trail race I did, that I just grabbed my 2-year-old pair and threw them on, went out.
Thomas, what's the worst shoe that you've ever run in?
Okay.
You still have a traumatic memory of this shoe?
I do. I started running and ran home and took them off. Do you remember the company Echo?
Echo. I feel like they made jeans or something like that.
No, you're thinking of the one with the rhino. No, this is Echo, like you would get them at the Good Feet store and stuff like that. ECCO. They made I think it was kangaroo leather or something like that. Like running shoe, and they had this geometry for the midsole that they wanted. And I threw it on and it felt sort of like a dress shoe. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to work out. started running and I was like, my feet were just killing me by like the second mile or so.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I was wondering if you'd be hesitant to name drop the worst shoe that you've maybe ever put on your feet.
No, I mean, I just like, you know, people, it's funny because when we have a lot of good shoe reviews, people are like, oh, you guys aren't critical of shoes. And when we slam a shoe and somebody likes it, they get mad that we slammed the shoe. So we can't really win. Recently, I kind of went off on Hoka. Not Hoka, Brooks for their race day shoe. It's the fourth version and they still haven't gotten it right. And I feel like it'd be a simple fix. So I did a video where I just kind of like said what I liked about the shoe, but I went pretty hard on what I don't like about the shoe. And it stirred up a lot of people. And then I didn't really enjoy the Puma Velocity and I, gave that sort of a bad review and, you know, people get pissed off, especially if you love the brand Puma or Brooks, like then we get a lot of comments, DMs, emails.
Yeah. Anyone who's been publishing things on the internet knows that you could publish one thing and some people love it. Some people hate it. You just have to keep doing your thing and do what you think is best.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I feel like over time, I'm proud of the team. When I look at, you know, the reviews that we've done as a group, they hold up over time. Like I've looked at them and I'm like, okay, we were right about that shoe. Everybody was mad that we were like, that's a piece of shit shoe. That company stopped making that shoe. It's gone. Like, and you know, it other things that we've been like, no, I really think this is a good shoe. Sometimes there's some, because different reviewers get it and there'll be different feedback. And like, for example, the Velocity, a lot of reviewers are giving it a good review. We happened to try it. We didn't like it. And I feel like as typically what happens is we'll look back on this in a year or two and there'll either be changes to the shoe that make sense or you just won't see it anymore.
What's your favorite shoe of all time?
You know, it changes because it is that when you look back at things, but I really loved the Lunar Epic, the first one that came out from Nike that had a high top. It was the best fitting upper for me I'd ever had. And people hated it because it did have like a high top on it. It really bothered some people, like it rubbed them the wrong way. But for me, that it disappeared and you just felt the cushioning underneath your foot and it just felt like you had really nice cushioned feet. It was definitely one of my all-time favorites. I'd have to say the Super Blast from Asics. And it's funny because when I first started running it, I didn't really like it that much. But the more I ran in it, the more I loved it. And recently, a shoe that we kind of gave a mixed review for its purpose because it's a race day shoe. I didn't really give it a really great review as a race day shoe. But it's become one of my favorite shoes just to run in. I've been doing all my long runs, 18, 20 miles in it and just love it. It's the Hoka Cielo X1 that just came out. My PR is in the marathon PR is in the Kimbara 2. And that was one of my favorites for a long time. And I used to love the Newton shoes. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah, I do.
I think that they still sell them, but I used to love like the Newton Fate and Distance and those ones back when Danny Abshire was in charge before they got bought out. And then things kind of went weird. But at that time, I really enjoyed what I like about the Alpha Fly for a race day shoe is that Newton really gave you that sensation. You could, like, I'm a midfoot to 4 foot striker. So getting that feedback from my stride was something I loved.
Yeah. So I just looked up the Nike Lunar Epic. There are some models of this shoe that, you know, they're obviously not around anymore, but they're on the secondary market well over $2,000. So these are almost like collector's items at this point.
Wow.
And now that you mentioned it and I looked it up, I remember this shoe. It with that high top is unlike any other high top you've ever seen. It's almost like a sock that
yeah, it's a sock
tight against your ankle. It's very interesting.
I wish more running shoes would experiment with it. It's not the best look. I think that's the problem, is like people trying it on are going to be like, what is this? Because a lot of people buying shoes for the mixed use of running and then wearing casually, and it doesn't really translate. But I had told somebody at Nike one time that it was one of my favorite shoes, and I wish that upper was on a suit, like a Vaporfly. And one of the guys at Nike had already done that because it was his favorite upper, and he had put the Lunar Epic top on a pair of Vaporflies.
I think it would work great for trail shoes because it would prevent a lot of debris from getting into the shoe itself.
The natural gusset.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it definitely would be I wish more companies would explore that.
Yeah, there's so many interesting ways of constructing a shoe that I don't think have been explored to their fullest. And this high top upper that Nike had a little while back is a good example of that, where it probably has its specific use cases where it can be really helpful, like maybe a trail racing shoe where you don't want to stop and take out that little stick or rock that got into your shoe because you're running a race and, you know, you're trying to go fast. Maybe you're kicking up a little bit more dirt and debris because of the extra speed. So for those types of scenarios, maybe that actually works really well.
Yeah, the Tecton update from the Tectonics from Hoka, I think they might be trying something like that. But what I really liked about it and why I think it worked, they're trying to squeeze out every percentage of, like, that's why it's called the 4% or the next percent. Trying to squeeze out everything. Well, where are we wasting energy? And I would guess ill-fitting uppers, like as you're, coming off of the midsole and it's catching up to you, it's more integrated with your foot and feels more secure, and you're getting every ounce or every little bit of, rebound out of that foam. You know, that might be another area which, you can increase, the efficiency of the shoe.
Yeah, that makes me think about how the upper relates to your running economy, because, I'm looking at the New Balance painting of a shoe behind you right now, and it's like this very clunky, like 999 model.
Yeah, 990V6.
Yeah, there you go. And, the newer, the Nike Lunar Epic, for example, has this Flyknit upper that I personally love as a casual shoe. It just feels like your foot is in a sock. And it makes me think of a study that came out recently that showed that if your sports bra is too tight, it reduces your running economy because there's just extra constriction on your ribs. And obviously that has a negative impact on your respiration. And that just makes me think, well, if the upper is constricting your foot in some way, even if it's almost imperceptible, is that changing how you run slightly? Is it not giving you full flexibility? Could that be negatively impacting your running economy? And could we get an extra 1% or whatever it might be, not by having a lighter upper, but by having a more flexible upper that isn't constricting your foot?
Well, that's why I stopped wearing sports bras. But I also think like when we're talking, when I'm like talking about the upper, like when you get heel lift and your foot's coming off, so like that's wasted energy. And my thought is, so if you had something like that sock upper that fits so good that the midsole is always going with you, you're not losing that energy of like kind of leaving the heel of the shoe. And to this date, like we're finally getting, there's the rest of the shoe brands that for a while everybody was chasing, and now it's pretty much caught up. Like there's a runnable race day shoe. The playing field's pretty even from everybody for a race day, and we're starting to see better fitting upper. So you can dial in like your preferences. Before it was like, if you want that, this is the shoe. Now you can kind of play, and there's different brands are offering different fits and different, widths of the shoe that can perform well for race day.
Yeah, I think that's super encouraging because there's so much variety now, and it's not like that variety has a lot of difference in quality. And I've found that compared to 25 years ago, I mean, all the brands now are pretty high quality. You know, you can run in a Puma shoe, New Balance, Saucony, Nike, Hoka, Ultra. They're all going to be high quality shoes. Now it just depends on what features work for you personally. And I like your advice to go to one of these, like, you know, expos or other places where you can try on a whole bunch of shoes, because without actually doing that, it's going to be really hard to find what you like. So is this a good place to say, like, go to your local running shoe store, go to a place where you can try on multiple shoes, especially if you're a newer runner, probably not the best to buy it online?
Well, actually, so when I started trying different shoes, because my local running store didn't carry all the models I wanted, and then some of the more obscure ones. So I started, I was actually using Running Warehouse because they have pretty good return policy. I would order like 6 pairs of shoes, have them shipped out. They shipped in like 2 days. I try all the shoes on, you know, around my living room, jog around a little bit, pack up the one I didn't like and send it back. And, you know, really helped me figure out what I wanted from a shoe back then. But what more so I'm talking about, not just going to the shoe store and trying them on, because in the store you're on carpet or you're on their treadmill or whatever. The demos are really the ones that I would do. So when a brand's coming to the store and they have a demo night, you can say, all right, we're going to do a 3 mile, 6 mile, whatever mile run. You can try the new Rebel V4. You can try the Nova Blast. You can try whatever. And you get a chance to try those shoes. That's the opportunity where, you know, the brands are usually trying to show off a shoe that they're excited about. So, you know, you get a chance to try those. And those are the ones that, you know, Nova Blast is a newer shoe for Asics. It's only got 4 compared to like the 27 of the Nimbus or whatever. So you go and, like, we're going to be doing like a shakeout run in Boston. And you can try on the shoe, go for a run, see what you like. And it's just an easier way, I think, to get a feel for it. But once you kind of find your zone, then that's where I think our site or other reviewers are really helpful, because you're like, okay, I like the Nova Blast 4. They're saying these shoes kind of fit into that category. And, oh, I like Adidas better than I like Nike. Okay, that's this style of shoe in that category. So for me, like, I like Super Trainers, which we categorize as not as race day, but like takes the race day technology and brings it into like a daily trainer or tempo shoe. So for me, the Boston 12, I love that from Adidas. It's great. It's got some of the Lightstrike Pro in it. It's got carbon rods in it. It's fun to run in. I think it's a shoe that you can do all your runs in. You could use it as a daily trainer. They're more expensive, but equivalent shoe. You could go down to SC Trainer from New Balance. You could go to the Endorphin Speed from Saucony. Go to the Super Blast from Asics. So that's a little cluster of shoes that you can say, okay, I like that. Here's what I can pick from the different brands. And then you can go try them out at the store and see what you like.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that once you know what you like, it's going to be much easier for you to look at a shoe, to read about a shoe, and to know what's going to work for your body and your style of running. But if you are that beginner and you don't know yet, it can be really helpful to actually go to a demo, like you said. And I've found that there's a lot more demos now than there were previously. You know, they're just becoming more popular. You know, there was a running retreat that I coached at a couple years ago, and we had on running shoes the whole weekend for anybody who wanted to try them. There was another shoe demo at an event I went to in Boulder just like 2 months ago. So these things are around, and I definitely encourage anybody to take advantage of them, because you just really get to try something that you may have never really tried in the past.
Yeah, it's a fun way. Also, it's being part of the community. So you get to go out and try the shoe. Get a run with other runners and maybe meet some new people. I mean, I find that like the energy around some of these runs is just so much fun that, like, yeah, you get to try the shoe, but there's usually like, you know, you have a beer or something afterwards with the people and you talk. It's fun. It's a great way to participate in the run community.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, Thomas, this has been so fun learning about shoes, and thank you for putting up with my cranky attitude towards modern shoes. I appreciate that. But you know, your perspective on shoes, I think, is really valuable because of the deep experience you have trying on so many different kinds of shoes over such a long time period. You've really seen the evolution of the industry over, you know, well over a decade. Is there any wisdom or shoe advice that you'd like to leave our listeners with that maybe we didn't cover yet? Something that I might have missed?
I mean, I think that it's more like, just know that running should be fun. And if you're running in a shoe that isn't fun, you're running in the wrong shoe. So I don't care if they fitted you for it, told you it was the greatest shoe in the world, whatever. If it's not, if you're not enjoying putting it on, lacing up and going for your run, it should be something that either disappears on your run or adds to the enjoyment of your run. Get a different pair of shoes, try different shoes, have fun with the sport. Literally, like, I look at it compared to like cycling, where if you need to buy a piece, it's so expensive. Or, you know, you want to play tennis and you don't use public course, you're going to have to buy tennis shoes, rackets, balls. Golf is the same thing. There's so much. So like, if you're spending as much time as I do, or probably you do, running, like, why not have really nice equipment? Why not have something that makes it enjoyable to get out there and run? So experiment, play with it, try things, and figure out what works for you.
Well said. That is good advice. Finally, where can folks find you on the web if they haven't already? Where's your home base? Where's your internet home these days?
BelieveInTheRun.com. And the easiest way, if you really want to stay on top of stuff, so, I mean, we publish so many things a week. We have our YouTube channel. We have two podcasts and a bunch of other stuff going on. We have a weekly email. And I don't know if you've ever read anything by Robbie, one of our senior editor. He's just a phenomenal writer. And every week he adds a little editorial to the email that is just gold. That's probably the easiest way to keep up with what we're doing. We do events with brands all the time. So we'll be in... we'll be at the Cherry Blossom Race, but we'll also be at Boston. We're doing activations with New Balance, where you're going to be able to demo some shoes. Activations with ASICS, where you'll be able to demo some shoes. We'll be hanging out with Adidas. So there's plenty of opportunities there to meet us in person. And we're always trying to do stuff for the community. So catch us out there.
Awesome. Well, there are links in the show notes to all of those great things that you mentioned, Thomas. Thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Now, this is great. It's nice to hang out and finally spend some time with you.
What an episode. Thank you so much for listening and being part of our community here. If you're getting value from the Strength Running Podcast, if the show has helped your running or made you rethink how you approach your training, please consider leaving a review or a rating in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Those reviews are incredibly impactful and helpful for this small business. If you have questions about your running, feel free to email me at support@strengthrunning.com, or you can search our website at strengthrunning.com. For more digestible tips, videos, memes, and more, follow me on Instagram at JasonFitz1. We'll be in touch.